From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Floating format tonight. Our main guests start in just a few moments. The World Health Organization says about 1,154 swine flu victims have died since the virus emerged in April. WHO also said there is no evidence that the new H1N1 virus is mutating into a more dangerous form, but they say that six patients have been found with a virus resistant to Tamiflu, the most commonly used swine flu drug. Now, keep this in mind. Worldwide, 300,000 to 500,000 people die every year from the so-called normal flu. Forced vaccinations and a number of other issues with guests in just a moment. Federal regulators added stronger warnings to a group of best-selling drugs used to treat arthritis and other inflammatory diseases, saying they can increase the risk of cancer in children and adolescents. Here are those drugs: Humira, Remicade, Simponi, and Enbrel. And the use of antidepressant drugs in the United States doubled between 1996 and 2005, they say, probably because of a mix of factors. According to researchers, 6% of the people were prescribed in 1996. That was 13 million people, jumped to 27 million people by 2005. In a moment, we'll begin our story about health care and forced vaccinations right here on Coast to Coast AM. Now, the health care reform bill that's been kicking around Washington, D.C., apparently contains language that allows state authorities to intervene in a citizen's home, your home, to ensure that both you and your children are properly immunized. Now, tonight we're going to be talking about forced vaccinations and also alternative health care and health care in general with a number of guests. Dr. Robin Falkov will be with me throughout the evening. She's practiced homeopathy for more than 25 years, a licensed doctor of oriental medicine, fully trained in traditional Chinese and herbal medicine. Her comprehensive consultations include nutritional therapies, diet, lifestyle review. Common bond of all these energy medicines paved the way to research into LED technology as well. She put together this panel that you'll be hearing from tonight. Let's go to Robin first of all. Hey, Robin, how are you?
Oh, gosh, George. I'm so happy that we have this show coming out in time for the start of the new school season. And aside from that, everything's just been an absolute madhouse.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're with us, and thanks for putting this panel together.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, let's
my
bring
pleasure.
In Barbara Lowe Fisher, co-founder, president of the National Vaccine Information Center. During the 1980s, she helped launch a grassroots movement to bring the issue of vaccine safety to public attention, including leading demonstrations at the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta and the White House in 1986. Here is Barbara Lowe Fisher with us this hour. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
Good. We've got you here.
Yeah.
Robin, let's start, first of all, by talking about the possibilities of forced vaccinations here. They're kicking this around in the health care reform bill. This literally gives them the power, if this passes and becomes law, that they can just go to your house. If they decide the swine flu, for example, is going to be a pandemic and we all need to be vaccinized, that we can go, they can go in and grab us and force us to do this or put us in jail?
Well, George, that's why I wanted Barbara on the air with us, because Barbara has given the clearest explanation as to what our rights are, because the issue here is informed choice. If there are people that feel that this is what they need, at least they can have the right to access to true information about the risks, the hazards, the studies that have been done, the contaminants, what they can expect. And then if they decide to go ahead and be vaccinated, that is their call. Barbara has worked for years to protect our rights and to let people know what they can do about that. You know, there's a catchphrase that Barbara's used when I've interviewed her about what they do for the greater good, and that mm-hmm. is bypassing the needs of individuals for what they consider to be expedient in protecting everyone. But it's not quite what it seems, and I think Barbara will be able to really help our audience and clear that up.
All right, Barbara, how bad is this situation in terms of forcing us to get vaccinations?
Well, let me give a little background.
All right.
In this country, vaccine laws are state laws. Anything not defined in the Constitution as a federal activity defaults to the states. Public health laws have never been federal, so the states have had control over the public health laws. What has changed in a big way since September 11th, 2001, is that in the name of bioterrorism, protecting national security, there has been a rewriting of public health laws at the state level. There's also been a number of bills passed in Congress, including the Homeland Security Act of 2002, that created the Department of Homeland Security, which is now the third largest federal agency in the U.S. government, employing more than 200,000 employees, consolidating a lot of power of different agencies into this one agency. There's also been Project BioShield laws passed in 2004 and 2006. These laws were also supposed to be addressing this issue of bioterrorism. But what happened was that drug companies, the biggest lobby on the Hill,
sure,
as well as public health officials, lobby Congress to expand this legislation to include natural disease outbreaks. Well, that includes influenza. So they also passed legislation which protects the companies, the drug companies, from liability whenever a national public health emergency is declared, like was declared on April 26th of this year, because of this outbreak of swine flu, a novel H1N1 virus that was identified near a pig farm in Mexico in April. So whenever a public health emergency now is declared at the national level, what can happen is an emergency use authorization can be invoked. When that emergency use authorization is invoked, the drug companies, again, are protected from liability. They create experimental drugs and vaccines that can be fast-tracked and bypass the normal FDA standards for proof of safety and efficacy. The situation that we have right now is that the drug companies are pressing the FDA very hard to fast-track unlicensed adjuvants that they've been trying to get approved for more than 60 years. These adjuvants in vaccines, what an adjuvant does is it makes a vaccine ramp up the immune system to have a really large response, an inflammatory response that then will produce more antibodies to make the vaccine more potent or more effective.
At a very rapid clip, I assume, right?
Yes. I mean, it really makes the immune system work really hard, really fast. Now, that can be a problem for people who already have immune systems that are kind of hypersensitive, like those of us who have autoimmune disorders or a history of autoimmunity in the family or allergy, severe allergy. But at any rate, they've wanted to do this because it also can allow them to use less antigen that they have to grow. In influenza vaccine, they usually use eggs. So it's antigen sparing is the term they use.
Oh,
they can make more of it because it ramps you up.
And make more money.
Exactly. Quicker production, more of it. And they just throw this adjuvant in to make everybody's immune response be really strong. Okay. One of the things I think is going on here, because this influenza outbreak is really turning out to be no more serious than the regular influenza that goes around.
If anything, it's less than that, Barbara.
Well, it's mild, really. Whenever you have infectious disease, there's going to be a certain portion of people who are going to have complications and die. Or be hospitalized.
About 1,000 people have died from this so-called H1N1 virus in North America. Don't we get, according to the CDC, about 36,000 deaths a year from what I call the normal flu?
Yes. Type A and type B influenza is associated in this country, according to the CDC, with 36,000 deaths. Now, we don't think that that's probably an accurate figure, that it's probably way overestimated. And I'll tell you why. Because the CDC admitted
Well, when I was on the FDA as a consumer representative on the FDA committee that looks at these products and says, well, yes, there's proof of safety and efficacy. You can license this vaccine. When I was sitting on the committee, I asked the influenza expert at the CDC, Nancy Cox, I said, how much of all flu-like illness out there is actually type A or type B influenza? And she said about 20%. That means that when we get sick in the flu season with a, you know, a cough, a runny nose, a fever, chills, something that looks like influenza, 80% of the time it's not caused by influenza. And those influenza type A and B is what are the strains that are included in the flu vaccine every year. So you do the math. Only 20% is influenza. And what I'm concerned about is the World Health Organization has now, as of July 6th, told everybody in the different countries you don't have to lab confirm these H1N1 swine flu cases anymore.
Barbara, I have never taken the flu vaccine, and I'm not going to. I try to let my own body fight this thing off.
Right.
And I would never, however, tell anybody else not to take it or to take it. That's their business. You've been warning parents about the risks of vaccines for 27 years. Why? There's something that bothers you about vaccines.
Well, and I would like to affirm what you just said, because that is my organization's position. We do not tell people to vaccinate or not to vaccinate. We take an informed consent position. That means, what does informed consent mean? It means you have the right to be fully informed about the risks and complications of infectious diseases, the risks and complications of vaccines, and have the legal right to make a voluntary choice about whether or not you want to vaccinate your child or yourself with one or more vaccines. So that being said, the reason I have done this work for three decades is that I learned the hard way. In 1980, I was a young mom, I had a 2.5-year-old son. I came from a medical family, doctors and nurses. I trusted blindly that vaccines were totally safe and effective. And I took my son in, and within 4 hours, I witnessed, didn't even know what I was witnessing, but I witnessed a convulsion, a collapse shock, a state of unconsciousness during which he was undergoing a brain inflammation after his fourth DPT shot.
Oh, my God.
And he regressed physically, mentally, and emotionally after that. And was it left with brain dysfunction, multiple learning disabilities, attention deficit disorder. This is a very precocious baby and young toddler. He was the most advanced of my three children and went on to have two more children. But he had to stay in a special education classroom during his whole public school experience. And I knew that it was probably because in my family, we have this history of autoimmunity and allergy. We're very high-functioning people. But you know, there are a lot of people in our society that have a hypersensitive immune system, and that has never been factored in these one-size-fits-all vaccine policies. And in the last 25 years, this government has tripled the numbers of doses of vaccines that our children are supposed to get.
Yeah.
And during that time, we have seen a tripling of the numbers of children who are chronically ill and disabled. Children, 1 in 6 child in America is now learning disabled. 1 in 9 has asthma. 1 in 100 to 150 develops autism, and 1 in 450 becomes diabetic.
Yeah, something's very wrong here.
Yes.
These numbers are just totally, totally inexcusable.
They are. Robin, stay with us, and you, Barbara, as well, as we continue to talk about the vaccines, whether you should get them or not. It's up to you, of course. And then we'll talk about alternative health and alternative medicine in just a moment. And then when we come back with Barbara as well and Robin, we're going to find out why the World Health Organization seems to be pushing this pandemic down our throats. What do they know that we don't know? Robin's website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's healthfreedomrights.com. Barbara Lowe Fisher's, she's got a couple of them, but the main one is nvic.org. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I'll have open lines for you during the last hour of the program. When we come back, Barbara Lowe Fisher and Dr. Robin Falkov as we talk about vaccinations on Coast to Coast AM. We're with Dr. Robin Falkov and Barbara Lowe Fisher this hour. Robin, think back a few years ago when you were on a program and we talked about if there was a genocide agenda. Remember then?
Oh, I remember that so clearly, George. I've thought about that over the years. And let me tell you, at the time when you brought that up, that was the first show I had done with you. And I thought, oh, my gosh, what do I say? Will people think I'm a conspiracy
nut? Is he asking me, right?
Yes. And no one will ever take me seriously. But look at what has happened in this country and around the world in the past 5 years. And I mean, it's just insane. We have no recourse for damage from vaccinations. We have things being forced on children because parents don't know any better. I mean, now you're getting the information out that they have a resource like the National Vaccine Information Center to turn to report adverse effects from vaccination. I mean, there's so much. But when you put it all together, it's that ugly specter of the almighty dollar, and that goes into big pharma. And it certainly seems to be an agenda.
Pretty scary. Now, Barbara, why is the World Health Organization pushing this pandemic? I mean, we've only had, 162,000 cases worldwide. We've only had 1,100 deaths. Why are they screaming that this is a pandemic?
Well, they were very, very quick to raise the level of the world alert to the highest level, level 6, on just really a few thousand cases being identified. And then the CDC very quickly followed suit. It was then that I really started to take a hard look at the, as I said before, the legislation that had been passed since 9/11 at the state and federal level. I mean, because, you know, when you declare a national emergency, all sorts of things happen, including this elimination of liability for the drugs and vaccines that will be used by the public. The Model State Health Emergency Powers Act, after 9/11, the CDC had funded this model legislation. They had had on their agenda for a long time to rewrite the public health laws in this country because they wanted to give expanded police powers to the states as well as to themselves. And they very methodically went and did that since 9/11. Right now, for example, Massachusetts has passed legislation within a week of the national emergency being declared in April that grants really expanded powers to the point where they can come in using the militia, can come into your house. They can, without your consent, they can inspect the premises. They can examine you, quarantine you, vaccinate you, and they even in this legislation can ban the free assembly of citizens. Now, the states have in various states across the country have passed various kinds of expanded public health laws since 9/11. I recommend that everyone listening learn about the laws in their states because we do not know in the fall if they are going to say that this virus is mutated and if they are going to set into motion the exercise of this power that they now have, that our elected officials at the state and federal level have given to them. And what I'm concerned about is on February 23rd, I went to the FDA meeting where they were discussing these swine flu vaccines that were going to be created by these five different drug companies. And what I was uncomfortable about was that there were Homeland Security people there in the room, along with the drug companies, who seemed to be running the show. Now, before, the Department of Health and Human Services really have been the ones who have made these decisions about, for example, when an emergency use authorization would be invoked, when a national public health emergency would be declared. I have this feeling that the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Defense, that's very, very much involved in Homeland Security, mm-hmm. are taking a lead role on this. And I think that, you know, we've got to be very aware that we need to stop the militarization of the public health infrastructure in this country because a lot of things can be done in the name of public health, in the name of protecting national security. What a lot of people don't know is that now the Department of Homeland Security considers any disease outbreak as a matter of national security.
Right.
Since when? Since when does that become a matter of national security? If we were talking about Ebola or something really deadly and lethal, that's one thing. We're talking about the flu, and it's a flu that has not been demonstrated to be lethal.
Do you think they concocted this strain in a laboratory and let it out on us?
You know, I have. I reported.
Well,
oops.
I'm here. You're here.
And I'm here.
And you're there. Okay.
We all here.
One of you bumped the button.
I did not touch it. Not me.
Not me either.
Must have been Richard.
Well, anyway, earlier in the spring, before this all happened, there were reports about, and I'm sure you've all heard of it, Baxter Labs in Europe putting in it was a lab virus that I think it was bird flu virus.
Exactly.
And it was sent around, and somebody in Czechoslovakia tested it on ferrets. It was put in vaccine, and they caught it, and the whole thing was interrupted. Baxter denied that they did it on purpose. Other people say it couldn't have happened except for on purpose. I don't know the truth about what happened. I wasn't there. However, verify is what's happened since 9/11 in terms of the legislation that's been passed and the fact that they were very quick at the World Health Organization and in this country to declare a state of emergency, and I don't think that it really is justified anymore. I mean, it should be taken down. We should not be operating under a national emergency declaration, and that we shouldn't be even talking about an emergency use authorization to fast-track unlicensed adjuvants and vaccines that they're going to give to pregnant women and they're going to give to our children in school systems.
That's the first line, right?
Well, it's just irresponsible. It's dangerous. They're only going to test these vaccines for a few weeks.
Well, they're trolling now for people to volunteer to test the vaccine. They're advertising on the radio, on television. They're looking for people, to report how they weather their vaccination with this contaminated vaccine.
Well, it'll be both. They're going to test both the unadjuvanted and adjuvanted vaccines. And what people need to know is there are two kinds of vaccines being created. There is the inactivated injected vaccine that you get in the arm. That is the vaccine that will contain both thimerosal, if it's given out of multi-dose vials, mm-hmm. which is a mercury derivative, or if they invoke the EUA, it may contain these oil and water adjuvants. The live virus vaccine that MedImmune is creating will be a live virus vaccine that you spray up the nose. It will not contain either the mercury preservative thimerosal, and it will not contain the adjuvant because live virus vaccines don't need an adjuvant.
So you're saying this one's better than the other one?
I can't make that decision for anybody. All I know is, when you get a live virus vaccine, one of the problems is there's shedding of virus.
Yes,
The oral polio vaccine was notorious for shedding. If you got it, when you swallowed it, they squirted it in your mouth. You shed the virus, the vaccine strain virus, for usually 4 weeks to 6 weeks. And if you came in contact, like babies came in, obviously were taken care of by their parents, and their parents changed their diapers, this live vaccine virus, polio vaccine virus, sometimes would cause vaccine strain polio in the person who came in close contact with a recently vaccinated person or in the child, who recently was vaccinated. And so all the cases of paralytic polio in this country, until we stopped using that vaccine in 1999, were vaccine associated in the last, 3 or 4 decades.
How much money are they going to make on this vaccine, Barbara?
Well, the Obama administration has already given $1 billion of taxpayer money to the drug companies to develop these swine flu vaccines. It's my understanding that this is a multi-billion-dollar market for the companies who are going to make the vaccines, because it's a worldwide situation.
Which they wouldn't have made a year ago because this didn't exist.
Absolutely not.
So they created a new market.
A big market, a worldwide market, because this is one of the things I've been watching as well for 30 years, is this sort of empire building, this expansion of the public health empire. And I know that the plan is it's being created in every country, including electronic tracking systems that will track the vaccines given. But eventually all the country vaccine tracking systems will be linked up to a worldwide vaccine tracking system. Again, infectious disease is now in the 21st century being identified as a matter of international and national security. And so, you know, if you are committed to a policy worldwide and nationwide of interrupting transmission of all infectious disease throughout, I mean, there are hundreds of vaccines being created for every imaginable infection that you can, you know, that humans suffer. And what nobody is doing is taking a step back and saying, you know, these viruses and bacteria have been here as long as man has walked the earth. We have an immune system that has always developed by being challenged by viruses and bacteria in childhood, like chickenpox and other childhood diseases. We're no longer allowing our children's immune systems to develop normally the way man has experienced his environment since he's been on this earth. In the last quarter century, we have totally changed the way children experience their environment because we are constantly atypically manipulating their immune systems with more and more vaccines. Today, our children are recommended by the government to get 48 doses of 14 vaccines from day of birth to age 6.
Too much.
And by 18, 67 doses of 16 vaccines.
Way too much. Let me tell you a little bit about what's wrong with all of this too, Barbara and Robin. Let me use Anheuser-Busch as an example, a great company. Now, they've been since bought out by a huge company called InBev. And I don't know how they're going to end up in terms of a great company. But when they were a publicly held company based in St. Louis, in their headquarters there, they were a great company. And what they would do when they needed to develop more market share, they came up with a product. But before they did, they realized what their market was, whether they were going to create a beer for, middle America, whether they're going to create a beer for a certain demographic, whether they were going to make a beer for upscale folks. They decided what their market was. Then they created the beer, and they named it, and they marketed it, and they did a brilliant job doing it. They created a market for their product. Pharmaceutical companies, in order for them to come up with new product, they need to have a new disease, don't they?
Definitely.
Yes, and see, what's dangerous is that the marrying up of government and corporations, industry and government. When you combine those two things, you have a dangerous situation. You have ideology and power in terms of people in government wanting more of it, and you have corporations who want to profit. And what a dream market. Here in this country now, we've got mandatory vaccination laws. That is, you must by law use the products, vaccines, that are made by private corporations who profit from the fact that these vaccines are mandated. The federal government recommends, because the federal government doesn't mandate, they recommend for universal use these vaccines. The states go ahead and mandate. And here you've got a market with the companies not having any liability.
What are we going to do when they start saying quarantine?
Well, and this is another thing people need to be aware of. They need to have a family plan, because if they decide they're going to quarantine a state or quarantine a community, the power they have is to cut off all the roads, put roadblocks up at the state borders, roadblocks up in your community. They have the right to
come into your house.
And so what we're advocating is, if you're going to implement quarantine, allow us to home quarantine. and allow us to make the decision about whether or not we're going to get the vaccine. If they force a vaccine on my family, they'll wipe us out because we cannot tolerate vaccination. Not everybody's the same. Some people are at higher risk than others.
Well, what if you don't get the vaccination? If they say we're going to vaccinate you and you say no, what can they do then? Put you in a camp?
Well, there's a couple of things they could do. Yes, they would have the right. There are quarantine centers that are being created at all the national airports because there's been a suggestion that they may have to reroute the planes through these airports. Now, that's obviously in a worst-case scenario, but that is verified. I mean, you go on my website. I don't make statements that I don't anchor.
Hey, Barbara, let me ask you this first. I mean, is this smart? They're planning something. I mean, we saw the disaster when Katrina hit New Orleans. They had no idea what they were doing. And they came up with a lot of criticism afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Are they smart to plan for a disaster? How come we don't trust them?
I think that it's always smart to plan ahead and plan for a worst-case scenario. What I'm worried about is when you've given people and agencies so much power, like you have since 9-1-1 at the federal and state level, sometimes people, when they have that power, want to exercise it, and sometimes they choose to exercise it inappropriately. And I think that as citizens, we have to be vigilant, and we have to say to our politicians, you know what? We need to have certain rights. And the right to informed consent to using pharmaceutical products that can injure or kill us is a right. And the right to home quarantine rather than being taken out of our homes to a place should be a right. And, you know, I suggest that parents and families plan, you know, that children have their phone number, that families have an emergency plan, that they have some supplies in case they're quarantined for a couple of weeks. They have a person that they can call to bring in or to leave food or whatever on their doorstep.
When this hits, if this hits, is it going to be fast?
Yes.
We have time to prepare?
Well, I think that it could be fast, but I think that right now they're backing off a little because we really have made a fuss. And you know, it's shows like these that are very important. I don't think that anyone should underestimate the power of the independent media, the power of the internet, the citizen journalist, the people like you who are talking about this on the airwaves are very important in terms of becoming a check and balance on the power of government. I think that there was a story in the Washington Post today. They were talking about reevaluating whether they're going to close schools. They know that this quote outbreak is not the kind of pandemic that they thought it was going to be. Now, true, this virus could mutate. True, it could cause more serious disease, but there's no indication of that now. And they should take down that public health emergency declaration. They have already purchased 190 million doses of H1N1 swine flu.
How do they know it works?
Well,
they have a flu that mutates as well. So it.
Yeah, if it mutates, then the vaccine may not be as effective anyway. They also have already purchased 119 million doses of this oil and water adjuvant.
Man.
Now, when you commit to something like that, that's what concerns me, is that they're going to put that adjuvant in there, and the companies are going to have gotten what they've been trying to get for 60 years without having to go through normal FDA.
Exactly. It took
process.
Them 60 years. They haven't gotten it approved. Doesn't that tell you something?
Yeah, it does tell you something.
Unbelievable. Well, Barbara, very quickly, give out your website again.
Yes, it's www.nvic.org, and we have a conference coming up, the 4th International Public Conference on Vaccination, October 2 through 4 in Washington, D.C. It's the biggest conference on vaccine safety that's been held in 7 years. I encourage everyone to come and learn how to be a vaccine safety advocate in your state.
Very good.
Protect your right to choose.
Thank you, Barbara Lowe Fisher. Dr. Robin Falkoff stays with us for the night. Dr. Andrew Molden joins us next, developer of BrainGuard. We'll be talking with him, and I'll tell you what, from here on in, every half hour, we'll open up the phone lines for you right here on Coast to Coast AM.